You're listening to the News Project Podcast for the week of November 30th, 2020, brought to you by GNAT TV. This podcast brings you these stories: energy savings equals lots of money, and a tree for the holidays. Hey folks, Oz from GNAT News. Today I'm in Manchester at the Riley Rink. And every time I visit this place, I am always reminded what a jewel of a facility this is in little old Manchester. But this place always had one big problem.
The major problem, like any nonprofit, is that we've always got to be very cognizant of expenses, and we're always having to fundraise to close the gap. Our two biggest expense items, like most institutions, are staff, people costs. And the second thing, especially in our case, trying to make an ice arena, is our energy costs.
And what do you estimate you were paying every year to do this? I mean, just in terms of energy costs.
Just in terms of energy costs, probably $110,000 to $120,000 a year.
That's a lot of money.
And you have to remember that essentially is pretty much all done in 6 months.
What was the first thing you tackled?
So the first thing that we tackled was what we call our thermal costs, our waiting room, our offices, our little skate shop, those areas that we, had to keep at normal heat temperatures, 68, 70 degrees.
Right.
And what we did there was used air source heat pumps, which replaced our propane units that we had for over 20, 25 years now.
And do you have a sense of how that changed your energy uses? 50%, 75%?
No, it probably changed it 90%.
90%?
We used to use 22,000 gallons a year, the majority of which was for the thermal part of our operation. This past year, we used a little under 3,000 gallons.
Wow. So just doing that one thing alone.
And the second thing that we did in the following year was we do use a lot of hot water in a couple of areas. One, we have a little kitchen area. Obviously, we have the normal sinks and the restrooms. We've got showers,
right,
locker rooms.
Right.
And then we also used to use a lot of hot water in resurfacing the ice every hour and a quarter to an hour and a half between sessions. I think a lot of people don't understand that the way ice was resurfaced was generally 140 to 150 degree hot water was produced every hour and a quarter, hour and a half, put into this tank here in the Zamboni, and then the Zamboni went out around the ice and laid down a thin film of expensive hot water. The next event that usually would happen when that Zamboni went around generally started it again in 15 minutes. And so what does that mean? Now we've got to take 140 degree surface water that's made the ice smooth and bring it down below freezing so we can skate on it. That caused our compressors, of which we have two here at Riley Rink.
Those big noisy things.
The big noisy things that you can hear in the background right now, which are electrically run to come on, full bore every hour and a quarter, hour and 20 minutes.
Right.
Just to bring the temperature down.
So tell me more about that. So to handle the cost of the hot water, is that where solar comes in?
Well, not exactly. We used heat pumps of a different kind, air to hot water, to make our hot water for the Zamboni, for our showers. That was in year two, and for our normal kitchen facilities. And then, in addition to that, we employed a device that we call the Vortex system, which, believe it or not, is this little guy right over here. That's basically...
Jim, how much does that little guy cost?
This little guy cost $27,000. When we first heard the price and what it was going to be about, we were obviously taken aback. So we did a lot of research and checked with other rinks throughout North America and also in Europe, which is where it comes from. They've had good success rates, so with the help of Efficiency Vermont, who gave us a pretty good incentive for it, we decided to employ it. Basically, all it does is take well water or town water, which is generally at 48 or 50 degrees. Water comes in through here and is spun as it goes through this little funnel-like here, and it takes out any air that's in the water, makes the water more dense. We can take that water without preheating it now at 50 degrees, put it back in the Zamboni, and go out and resurface our ice. We still get good quality ice, in fact, harder. But the key to it is that instead of having to bring a temperature down below freezing from, say, 140, now we're bringing it down from 50 to below 32 degrees. So what does that mean? What that means is we aren't making with propane hot water. But the bigger thing is our compressors now are running much less time and much more efficiently to keep good ice. To give you an idea, in our prior year of operation, the compressors, or 2 years ago, ran 2,200 hours a year. This past year, the compressor runtime was only a little over 1,100 hours, so it cut it in half. And the compressors are run with electricity, and obviously, it's expensive electricity.
So there's sort of this continuing cascade of savings. So all of a sudden, the compressors are used less, so they last longer.
They're going to last longer. There's less maintenance to them. It's just easier on all kinds of equipment. And then that brings in sort of the final loop that we've been able to do here is there was a solar system on our property in which the owner was willing to sell to us. So we ended up buying that solar system from him. And that solar system produces about $40,000 worth of electricity, which now covers two-thirds of our total electric bill.
All those major upgrades, what was your cost before, and where are they at now? Sense of that?
Costs were approximately $110,000 to $120,000 a year, depending on the price of propane. Right now, in the last two or three years, we've been enjoying a low-cost propane, about $1.50 a gallon at the volumes we were buying it at. But if I take that rate and the electrical savings, we are saving in excess of $70,000 a year.
Significant,
yeah.
Right.
So, good chunk.
I'm curious just about your thoughts. Two quick questions. One is, I noticed that everyone is doing their best to go to solar who can afford it. And so one of the questions I'm having, and I don't know if you have any thoughts on this, is it seems to me like all the people can afford to will jump off the grid, and that the only people left will be the people that can't afford solar. And then I see the big, like, GMPs of the world saying, well, somebody's got to pay to us to fix the telephone poles and the storm's coming. And so it's going to be the poor people because the people that can afford it have left. So I see a conflict coming. Like, how do you see that? True
or
false?
Let me explain something. When we talk about offsetting our solar, our electricity costs with a solar array, for instance, Green Mountain Power does not allow you to cover the costs of poles and wires. And small fees like Efficiency Vermont has a 6% fee on the bill. We are not allowed to absolve those.
Right.
So those are still going to always remain. And I think that only fair. I mean, you have utilities, it's got ongoing maintenance expense, and,
right,
you know, keeping poles and wires with all the storms we're having is costly.
Yeah.
So those costs will always exist. As I mean, one of the opportunities that some people who don't have the cash sitting in a bank account to go out and do a solar or be part of a solar array, there are leasing programs in which an array can be put on your roof or at another site, and you put up no money, you don't get the 100%, you know, 90% savings that you would that's on your, which case where you own the system, but you can significantly reduce your costs. So there is that opportunity if people are interested.
So I guess the conclusion I could draw from what you said is you don't see a conflict in the future. Something will be worked out, and you'll never be able to truly escape the grid.
No, I mean, and that goes back to the concept that energy has costs.
Right.
I mean, there is no free energy.
And communities have costs.
Even when we take it from the stun, we have to convert it. So there's always some cost to it.
Yeah. All right, I have one last question, I swear to God. So when you look 20 years, 30 years, which you and I may or may not see, like, what do you see? What do you see in the future? Do you see oil gone? Do you even see solar panels gone? Do you have thoughts on that?
Well, I certainly see oil or the oil industry certainly significantly reduced. I'm not so sure that you're going to see it gone entirely, because there's all kinds of other products that we get out of the oil industry that require them to be functioning. But it's certainly going to be, you know, brought way back. There's no question about that. Solar panels, just in 10 years that we've been doing installations, the efficiency has gone from about 14% conversion of sunlight to energy to 22 or 24 in the open market. There's technologies in labs right now doing over 30%. So whether it's a panel as we know it,
right,
but a receptive device to convert sunlight to electrical energy is certainly, you know, going to improve. No different than cell phones that we've had from.
Right, or those giant satellite dishes, remember?
Yeah, monster.
Do you see solar eventually winning out over wind and water in terms of producing?
I don't see it winning out on a sort of a global scale of wind. Wind can produce much more, a greater percentage of energy than solar, at least as we know it today.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Which is a little bit of the unfortunate thing. We've taken a position in this state that we've kind of eliminated any future wind industry.
Right, so wind is sitting out, water's sitting out. It's down to sunlight for Vermont.
At the moment, yeah.
Jim Henn, thanks so much for spending some time with us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hey, I heard you got a joke for us.
I do. A corny one. So what do you call a broken escalator?
What do you call a broken escalator?
Stairs.
I've been out long enough. I know how those things.
Well, every year for the last 15 years, a group of us who brought the U.S. Capitol tree to Washington in 2007 have been taking a tree from the property here and bringing it to the Veterans Home in Bennington. It's an annual event. We do it generally the Monday after Thanksgiving. But this year we had a special contingent of the state troopers that came over and helped us. And the tree is a 12-foot Fraser fir, been maybe 25 years at the ground. And it's a privilege and an honor to bring it to the Veterans Home, particularly this year more than any other year. And along with the tree, we'll be bringing 150 challenge coins from the Vermont Bulldogs Association, together with some caps and some presents for the veterans. And we want to just show them our appreciation for what they have done. I want to wish all our veterans a happy holiday. And not only our veterans, but all those men and women who are serving the country today in the far-off places.
Thanks for listening local. For more local content, visit GNAT.tv.